Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Good News Ministries of GNM.org. It's the Catholic place for faith builders. You'll find daily good news reflections on the Scriptures of Mass, written by Terry Modica, to help you in your everyday life and struggles. Visit GNM.org today. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Hello and welcome to Real Living. This is Lavinia Spirito with Mary Lou Nemecek, and we are going to shift gears a little bit. We've been in Isaiah deeply immersed, except to just take a breather to tell you about the crisis of truth in the church. And I thought we would just kind of keep going along the directions of what does it really mean for your average Catholic Christian to even understand the concept of spiritual warfare? And when we speak, do you know anybody of your wider acquaintances who are Catholic, Mary Lou, who really and truly would understand what a spiritual warfare is?
I think many people are really not aware of it. Those that are more attuned through scripture and so forth, I think recognize it more so than just the good Catholics that show up for Mass and the other sacraments on a regular basis. I don't think it's on their radar screen as it should be.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that, I think, contributes to what the crisis of truth that we were talking about two or three weeks ago, right? In terms of the effect of being ignorant of spiritual realities other than those that make you comfortable, right? So because Nobody wants to think about negative spiritual realities. But there's... there is a battle, and I've got magisterial teaching quotes that I'm going to give you all from recent popes as to the reality of the battle. There's even a section from Vatican II, from the Council, from Gaudium et Spes, the Constitution of the Church in the Modern World. And it talks about, quote, a monumental struggle against the powers of darkness pervades the whole history of man. The battle was joined from the very origins of the world and will continue until the last day. Caught in this conflict, man is obliged to wrestle constantly if he is to cling to what is good.
That's so true. So
those
true.
Those are the meek and mild fathers of the council, right?
Right.
The ones who were supposed to usher in the spirit of Vatican II. Well, this is the spirit of Vatican II, and This is a proper understanding, right, of the battle that we are known. One more quotation from John Paul II. And this is just think about it. You're your average person, your average vanilla Catholic, and the Pope says this to you. Of course, he wasn't Pope then. He was the Archbishop Cardinal of Krakow in 1978. But this is what he said. He was addressing the U.S. bishops. He said, quote, we are now standing in the face of the greatest historical confrontation humanity has gone through. Now, okay, John Paul, tell us what you really think. I do not think that wide circles of American society or wide circles of the Christian community realize this fully. We are now facing the final, this is the kicker, the final confrontation between the church and the anti-church, between the gospel versus the anti-gospel.
It's so true and so relevant in today's world. And, you know, on a previous show, we were talking about people that really don't believe in the existence of the devil. And if you put this into the perspective of what the church teaches us, in fact, the Catechism 391 says behind the disobedient choice of our parents lurks
a seductive
voice, opposed to God, which makes them fall into death out of envy. Scripture and the church's tradition see in this being a fallen angel called Satan or the devil. So if there is an enemy, we have to identify it, which we've done in previous shows. And now we've got to enlighten people about what this battle is really about.
I know. And you got to keep your sense of humor in all this, which is why I love Peter Kreft. Of course, C.S. Lewis, a generation or two generations ago, wrote the Screwtape Letters, which are a classic at this point. And it's the arch devil, whatever his name is, Screwtape, writing to his nephew Wormwood, right, who's in the academy. He's in the academy. He's like training still. and it's all about how to subvert human beings, because they've each been assigned a quote patient unquote. Just like the idea is that because, you know, there's a guardian angel who is for good, that somehow everybody's been assigned a guardian demon. Who knows? That's probably not true. But we do know that certain demons are sent to people who are specifically effective, right? And to people who are bothering the guy downstairs, right? To kind of sway them off the path, right? Right. That whole idea of the devil in red tights with the pitchfork and an arrow tail is could not be farther than the truth. Also, the cartoons where you have the devil on one shoulder and the demon on the other. I think Peter Kreft is kind of, you know, embroidering on that kind of idea, right? And he talks about, you know, this is just the introduction of the letter that Peter Kreft, of a book that Peter Kreft wrote called The Snake Bite Letters. And so you could just consider them the Screwtape Letters for the American third millennium, right? Because he's kind of updated a few concepts, right?
Right.
And I love this first sentence. Well, nephew, to the business at hand, your patient has become a Catholic. So the guy that he was assigned to tempt, right?
Right.
But I love his next sentence, a modest setback. In other words, no biggie. It's okay. Yeah.
We can take care of this. Sure.
You know, this may shock you, since you know that it's not that it's a modest setback, since you know that the church is our only remaining earthly enemy of any substance. But he says, you forget, your patient is American, delightfully, typically American. And so what does that mean? Well, it means that most Americans consider themselves as Catholics or Jews or Muslims or whatever. But first of all, they consider themselves, their primary identity is national affiliation. We are Americans. You know, we're from the U.S. And then we have a Catholic patch on our garment, right, on ourselves. And if things don't go well, we can take the Catholic patch off and, you know, put a secular humanist patch on, you know. It's like we're not Catholics who are Americans. That, I suppose, is a juxtaposition, right? Americans who happen to be Catholic rather than Catholics who happen to be Americans. Because the true fatherland is where? Is it here?
No, it's heaven.
Our citizenship is in heaven. And I love this one, especially in the light of current events. Like most Americans, your patient is sentimental. He lives by emotion more than thought. What about that whole thing about not hurting people's feelings, right? About not offending people, even if it's true, right? And then he says, right now, you got to be careful because he's a believer who knows he's a believer. Well, he just converted to the Catholic Church, right? The goal is to make him an unbeliever who still assumes that he's a believer. This is a great one. Because and then he goes on to give the example of vaccination. Then he says, do not attack his faith head on, but rather subvert it, carefully leaving enough residue so that he'll still think of himself as a believer, but he's different than every other believer. He's an advanced believer. He's a sophisticated believer. He can see the nuances, right? He's a modern believer, or he might even be a dissenter. Right. And that, what does that mean? That's a dissenter from church teaching, right?
Right.
But he's, oh gosh, but never, he's not an unbeliever. So who do you, those are those people who are, say, they're faithful Catholics and tithe and go to mass and might be very sincere in their hearts. But as Paul says in Romans 1, we are blind and deafened by sin. And we don't see the extent of our sin. And those would be the Catholics who say, yes, I can't impose my, you know, I'm privately opposed to abortion or euthanasia or whatever. And I'm just, you know, I'm not going to impose my views, right? Because it's all it's considered to be is just a little religious view, as opposed to one of the most important human rights issues of our time, right?
Well, that's a failure on our part, because we're all called to provide the truth to people. Mm-hmm. In a loving way, and to make them aware. And we can't We can't not do that. We're obligated to do that as Catholics. But as you're describing this, he's going after them in emotional language, and it's going to work every time, don't you think?
Absolutely. And when I think about this, I think about the nuanced, advanced, sophisticated, modern believers. I think about two things that happened last week and two events done by two Catholic priests. So I figure on the podcast I can talk about it. I didn't name names on the
the instances you're going to raise.
Well, there's two things that happened last week. One is the Superior General of the Jesuits gave a talk and basically said something. Let me see if I can find my notes. He gave a talk saying something like, Satan is just an idea, right? He's just an idea representing, here we go. The Superior General Society of Jesus, Father Arturo Sosa, he called Satan a symbolic reality, not a personal reality, to which the International Association of Exorcists took great exception, which they might, right?
Yeah.
but isn't that interesting? The International Association of Exorcists pointed out to Father Sosa, hey, the real existence of the devil is a personal subject who thinks and acts, has made the choice of rebellion against God. It's the truth of the faith that has always been part of Christian doctrine.
He has to go back and reread Genesis, I believe.
Well, I mean, but he's probably read it. He probably taught it. He probably has a PhD in Genesis. That's the problem.
That's scary. That is scary. That's rationalizing everything, and that's terribly dangerous for us.
Well, I think that's a clear example of somebody who's sophisticated, nuanced, modern, that he's so modern and sophisticated that he's kind of nuanced himself. You know, I'm sure 16,000 Jesuits probably would not think that, but their leader did.
Yes.
Right? And then another example of a troubling example is Father Richard Rohr just published a very popular book. And I don't have the title right now, but it has universal in it. And it has something to do with how basically the truth of God is universal and that Jesus' sacrifice and Jesus' person really don't really matter because in the end, everybody will be saved, even Satan. That's the essence of his book. And he has been kind of building up to that for a while through his publications. I know lots of people who are sincere seekers and followers of Jesus who love Richard Rohr. And I'm sure he has some wonderful points to make. Mm-hmm. And insofar as he brings people close to God, I think that's great. But in this instance, and the book is on a bestseller list on Amazon for religious books. You know, because he's the so-called sophisticated, nuanced, modern, he's a little bit better than traditional writers, you know, that kind of thing. I think those are two examples right there of how the faith can be subverted. And then he goes further and he says, you see, a little religion often does more good than no religion at all. And he gives the idea of vaccination. He says, you inject a healthy body with a light dose of disease germs and then you build up resistance.
Right.
To the rest. So a little religion is like a mild case of cowpox. It prevents the far deadlier smallpox.
Mm-hmm.
So a little religion, let's say you're a cradle Catholic, let's say you've gone to, these are the elements of vaccination. You went to a Catholic school. You went to a Catholic college. Never mind that you lost your faith in a Catholic college and that you never go to Mass, or you go to Mass 1.5 times per month or something.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow you're Catholic, and how dare you tell me that I am not a Christian, that I'm not a Catholic? Because my family's always been a Catholic, and we give money to the church, and we show up occasionally. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that kind of idea of vaccination, basically. They've been vaccinated against the crucial importance of who Jesus is.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Of the sacrifice of the kerygma, of just like every element. Lest you all think out there think that, you know, we're getting a little too hopped up about all this stuff. Right now in the church, in the Catholic Church, and perhaps even in the Protestant denominations, there are more people who think that way than there are people who think with the scriptures and the teaching of the church. So it's not a small thing. It's not a small problem, right? So
well,
then
And a lot of surveys being done that people are not checking any religious belief at all, the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, no religion, really. Mm-hmm. That's scary. And it's growing, and it's growing in the younger populations because of, I'm sure, all of the things on the internet that you can read, and you're vaccinating yourself against a relationship with the Lord, with any sort of organized religion, be it Catholic or any other religion, because that's not necessary anymore.
Well, you know, it's also the awful fruit of the tree of relativism and secular humanism. You know, I mean, it's good to be a humanist Christian. I mean, I'm all for human beings, love human beings, you know, I love what they've done. It's great. Right. But humanism, it conceived in the Renaissance framework of man being the measure of all things.
Right.
That's a bit different, right? It's a bit high. It's a bit high. Anyway, so this is, and then Peter Kreft continues in the words of the uncle to the nephew at the academy. He says, a surprising number of the creature that would be the patients, that would be the guy he's supposed to harass, theologians and religious education experts believe that the only sin is to believe in sin. So knock out sin and the enemy's whole structure caves in. If there's no sin, there's no need for salvation. And thus, the dogmas of incarnation, atonement, resurrection, ascension, second coming, basically are myths.
Yes, that's right.
And then he says, if he doesn't believe in sin, he won't believe in demons, will he? Because, you know, sin is outdated, and who knows what that other stuff is, right?
That's right.
He says that people before the 20th century at least understood they were fighting, who they were fighting, right? You're fighting the world, the flesh, and the devil, right? Literally. But now, it's like, forget it. Most mortals don't even know that we are at war, that there is a battle pitched from the very beginning of time, right, between the kingdom of darkness and the kingdom of light. But what happens when you believe you're not at war and yet you are at war? You become soft. And he says they demand their rights. They think of the earth not as their training ground, but as their home. They confuse wants with needs.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing? So he says, look, this is what we need to do. First of all, we often used to believe enemies were concrete human beings. And this was great because we just fooled a whole lot of people. You know, the enemy's Hitler. The enemy is, you know, communism. The enemy is the bourgeoisie. The enemy is ignorance. The enemy is, you know, whatever. And so you kind of throw things at it. But Paul says, what, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. And then he says, two, always make the enemies abstract. It's never, you know, demonic powers. It's always, it's vice, it's ignorance, it's injustice, right? It's inequality, right? What are the buzzwords of today? It's inequality, it's bigotry, it's imposing your morality on others. It's whatever it is. It's very vague though, right? Keep it vague. And remember that they need to think about the planet that they live on as not as a battlefield, which it is, right?
Right.
But as a bathtub. I love this final analysis. Be sure to keep the water lukewarm or tepid. At the right moment, pull the plug. What delight to contemplate their surprise and terror as they discover they can go down the drain.
That's a scary thought.
Is that like, that's petrifying, yes. But it's funny. I mean, it's got Peter Kreft's wit in it, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we can start this next thing I wanted to talk about and then maybe continue the next show. There's another article that Mary Jo sent me about an homily that Fulton Sheen gave 60, 70 years ago, maybe even 80 years ago. And it has to do with the same topic, the topic of spiritual warfare, and about how most people just don't understand it, right?
That's right.
And he says that in our day, Satan, this is a homily that you can find it online. It says the battle lines are not political, not right versus left. It is Christ versus Antichrist. And there is actually, you can hear the whole homily that he gives. It's only about 15 minutes. But some points to pull out. He says, in our day, Satan masquerades as a great humanitarian, right? So all we want is peace and wealth and prosperity, but we want them not as ways to bring others to the kingdom, right? To bring the kingdom in. We want them just as ends into themselves. God gives us peace and wealth and prosperity, whatever he gives us, so that we can bring in the kingdom. So you see the difference? Most people aim for the things that are actually tools. All right. And then tolerance. Tolerance has become the virtue, as we know. We've spoken about that many times. And it's basically indifference to right and wrong. That's what tolerance
is. It eliminates right and wrong. You're going to tolerate everything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So he says, and this, these are notes that I took straight from hearing him, his talk. So therefore, if there is no heaven, if there is no hell, then there is no sin. And if there's no sin, there's no judgment. And if there's no judgment, there's no good, there's no evil. Evil is good, and good is evil. Does that sound familiar?
Oh, yes, it does.
Right? Two final concepts. Satan will increase the love in people, but only the idea of love. It's love for love's sake, right? Remember that silly book in the 60s? Love means never having to say you're sorry.
Yes. The movie and all that.
Like the whole romantic love. Fall in love with love. Mm-hmm. But the minute you have to commit yourself to a person, then that's where the chips fall, right?
That's right. Then
the idea of brotherhood. You remember the brotherhood of man? You know, that whole idea. But, you know, what does brotherhood imply? That there's a father.
That's right.
And yet, this is what Satan is promoting in our day. Brotherhood without the fatherhood of God. And love for love's sake, not love for a person. We will continue this conversation on our next show. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
BreadBox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.